This week we learn why Eurofast growth lags the US, why there are 18 TV OSs and counting, and how super apps help broadcasters fight global SVOD. Listen on for more.
Welcome to this week's edition of Inside the Stream. This is Will Richmond from Video News, and that was Colin Dixon from across the pond there. Hey, Colin, you are in London right now, right? How's everything?
I'm in London, and it's the usual British weather, somewhat overcast, a bit rainy, but otherwise London is swinging London as usual.
Okay, great. Well, as we get into the podcast, you're going to be sharing some of what you've learned at the conference that you've been attending this week. And before we get into that, we're going to get into some data from Hub Research, Hub Entertainment, that caught our attention this week. And you're going to start us off.
Yeah, Hub always puts out really interesting data. And they put out some snippets from their new report, Evolution of Video Branding, which is a new study that they've just compiled into a report, and you can pick up from their site. And one of the things that they led with, Will, was they basically asked people about their awareness of and understanding of some of the top SVOD services. And the remarkable thing here for me, and I think when you looked at it earlier, you were also amazed at just how deep the awareness is now of these services. First off, awareness of Netflix, everybody, 100% of the survey group that they talked to had heard of Netflix. And it was the same for Prime Video, Hulu, Disney, everything, even Apple TV Plus, 96% had heard of Apple TV Plus. And that, to me, I think is almost a bigger statement as the understanding of each of the services, and which we'll get to in a moment. That, I think, really speaks volumes to how SVOD services now have really just become a part of the television landscape. So that was one thing. The second thing they asked about was, it's a little bit of a fuzzy concept, and that is they basically asked how confident people were that they could explain the difference of one platform to another. And, you know, Netflix does, of course, pretty well there with 88%. But sort of at the bottom of the stack here, at the bottom of the eight named top services, is Apple TV with 51%. And basically their conclusion here, Will, is that without a clear identity for a platform's brand, i.e. Apple TV Plus, that they claim that viewers are making choices based on shows. And I have to say, if I was pressed to describe Apple TV Plus and how it differed from Peacock and Max and Paramount Plus, I would probably have to think a little. I don't know about you, but the way I would describe it as being quality versus quantity. So don't expect to find a deep content catalog, but what you will find is some quality material. But only 51% of people said that they felt like they could articulate the value and what they understand as the difference between Apple TV Plus and other services. And really, they have pivoted this to sort of say that this results in, without clear view of what a brand is, up to 40% of viewers say that they are really driven by a specific show to get them to sign up. And that means that advertising those new shows and the banner headline shows really is a great recruitment tool, particularly if you don't have a strong brand. So I thought that was a pretty interesting data, and another sign, Will, I think, of the maturity of the SVOD market, right?
Yeah, well, for sure, the awareness figures, like you, I really took note of. I mean, for even the newer services like a Peacock or an Apple TV Plus to be scoring awareness of 96% and above, is I think really, you know, speaks volumes about how popular streaming content, streaming services have become. So for sure there. And then, you know, to your point, you know, this lack of a clear identity, I think sort of makes sense because all of these services are really general entertainment services. You know, many of them have some sports mixed in now as well, but they're really primarily entertainment services. And I think if, by, you know, analogy, if somebody had been asked the question of, like, what's the difference between CBS, NBC, and ABC 50 years ago, I think they would have been hard-pressed to kind of explain a clear identity for either one of those brands as well, and probably would have instead identified, you know, particular shows that were on those networks, or maybe a network news anchor back, you know, back in the day when, you know, those folks are pretty well known. But I don't know that the brand itself has a clear identity to yeah. viewers. So yeah. so that's sort of to be expected there. And yeah, I mean, the signing up for services based on a hit show, that's we know that's been happening for a while now. And that's, I think, one of the reasons why churn is an issue. People come in, watch their show, then drop out, churn on, move on to the next, you know, the next service where their next favorite show is. So that's an issue I think the industry is still trying to tackle.
Yeah, I do too. So anyway, that's some pretty interesting data there from Hub. So you might want to cruise on over to the Hub's website, check out that report. Will, what did you see in the news this week?
Yeah, so ode to you here, Colin, BBC News, near and dear to your heart. And this is a lead-in, by the way, for listeners. This is a lead-in for Colin to be able to talk about his observations from the conference. But I noticed this independently, that BBC News, which has been a network available on pay TV here in the U.S., is now going to be distributed as a fast channel on connected TV platforms. So it will be available initially on Samsung TV Plus, Zumo, Sling TV, Plex, Vizio, and Pluto TV, with more to come. And I think it's a great move. I watch BBC News periodically, and I think it's a, as I think most of us would agree, a high quality news provider. And I think, especially as we're, you know, living in these times that we are, where trusted news is so incredibly important, BBC is a great addition, and BBC News rather is a great addition. And so to have that available as a fast channel, free on different connected TV platforms, I think is a great addition, is a strong decision for them as well. AMC Networks is the partner, BBC's partner in BBC America, and is also going to be selling ads and doing the distribution for this BBC News fast channel. So I regard this as a real positive. How about you?
I do too. And you know, the remarkable thing there, Will, is basically it's the same channel that is part of the pay TV bundle. So if you have BBC News in your pay TV bundle, you can actually access, when they launch this, you will actually be able to access it for free without a subscription. Yep. Through these fast services. So I think that's a pretty clear statement right there, don't you, Will?
Yeah, agree. I agree. It certainly makes it available to a lot more households in America than currently.
Yeah, and to really illustrate why they're doing this, Will, is the Bruce Leishman's report on the number of people that exited the pay TV world. I think he said it was 5 million in 2023. So that's a big change, and it really indicates why now cable TV channels like BBC News are looking to FAST to help them continue to reach their audience.
Fair enough. Well, Colin, you've been in London, and as we said at the top of the podcast here, you have some observations from the conference that you've been attending. So why don't we go ahead and let's get into those.
Yeah, and some of these are going to be pretty familiar, I think, to audiences. And talking of that launch of BBC News on the Fasts, Fasts were a big topic at the show, and the show I'm attending is actually the Connected TV World Summit, which is put on by AdWanted. This Fasts were one of the key things that they talked about. And I actually have believed that Fasts will not grow as quickly as they have in the US. And there were several reasons for that. And actually, I was really pleased because there was a UK analyst, a gentleman named Marcus Kite, who's a consultant at Oliver and Albarn. And he gave a presentation, and he gave out three reasons, and they basically, I'll list his reasons, but they pretty much match my understanding of the difference between the UK market and the European markets and the US markets, and why fasts really won't grow as fast here. The first one is the strength of the existing free-to-air market, and really, that's absolutely outstanding in the UK and in Europe, in markets like the UK and Germany. Still, people are watching a lot of free-to-air television. That isn't going to change anytime soon. And actually, another theme we'll talk about in a minute suggests that I think that the public service broadcasters and general broadcasters are going to hold up pretty well against fasts going forward. So that was his first reason. The second reason he gave was that the ad loads on fasts versus linear TV are actually quite a bit higher on fasts. And the reason is they're being run by US companies, and US companies are approaching this from a US ad load. And typically, ad loads are much lower in Europe. He was saying that, today, UK, in the UK and France, peak ad loads are between 7 and 9 minutes. And what you're getting on the UK AVOD fasts is 5 to 7 minutes. So there's only a 30% lower ad load on the fasts. Whereas in the US, the ad loads are a lot lower on fasts, he claims, 50% lower. Of course, we get 12 to 15 minutes of ads per hour, and on US fasts, they only get 5 to 10 minutes per hour. So the difference in ad loads isn't as high in Europe and the UK and France, these two markets that he looked at. So that's the second reason why he thought that they would be slower to gain interest. And the third reason is that the content offering in the US, I think, is stronger. And there are a couple of reasons it's stronger. One is that we're getting originals. So you're seeing originals on Roku and Freevee and on Tubi. They're producing, really new content, fresh content for those services to help drive viewership. You're also seeing a lot more premium content. So, of course, HBO has been licensing Westworld and several other shows into fasts, so that's another thing. And the third thing they point to is news, and the BBC launching BBC News is a great example. We've got very, very strong news offerings here in the States. So those were his three reasons why he thought that fasts were going to grow much, much slower in the UK and Europe than they have in the US. And I've got to tell you, I think he pretty much nailed it. I think that really explains why they are experiencing much lower growth. So that was the first theme that really stood out to me. And if you're a US provider of a fast service and you are hoping to quickly make a mint in Europe, I think that really tells you that you're gonna have to think again and be much more patient with the service there. That was the first theme. The second theme was TV OSs, Will. There was a lot of discussion for TV OSs, and you know that this is one of my favorite topics, one of my pet peeves, is that there really are a ton of TV OSs, and the expectation has been the number of TV OSs would shrink, not grow. Anthony Wood has said many times that he believes that the market will consolidate down in the same way that mobile has, down to two. And of course, he's hoping that Roku OS will be one of those. But I gotta tell you, I can't see that happening anytime soon. Certainly, there were several presentations which named 17, 18 TV OSs. When you throw in some that are in Asia and China, you end up with 17 or 18 OSs. And I really see no sign whatsoever that people are going to consolidate and that we're going to see less. In fact, I think we're probably going to see more. And I heard several presenters who agreed with me at the conference. And the reason is simple. Margins on TVs are very, very slim. And if you can build a sustainable recurring revenue business through your TVOS with margins of 50 to 60%, which is exactly what we're seeing for Roku and for Vizio, then boy, that can make up for and allow you to sell TVs basically at cost and keep your prices very, very low, which will keep those boxes going out the door.
You're talking about, just to jump in, Colin, for a second, you're talking about the idea of using the OS as a pathway toward being able to drive advertising dollars, not
exactly
in and of itself, but also as licensing possibly, or primarily as Roku and Vizio have done, or primarily as an ad play, do you think?
Even in a licensing case, Will, it's really down to the ads. It's all about selling ads in the interface and in the built-in fasts. Those are really the crucial pieces of the puzzle there that drive the revenue. That's why we see Vizio and Roku so focused on ARPU, the annual ARPU numbers, so growing that number. So that's really where all the recurring revenue is there. But the interesting thing here is, you know, everybody sees this enormous pot of money, and believe you me, it is enormous. I've counted the total amount of revenue that sort of flows through TV screens in the US, and the television business in the US is worth something like $230 billion a year. That's an enormous amount of money. Much more than half, probably 60% of it, is still locked up in traditional delivery, you know, traditional pay TV and traditional TV ads. With all of that switching into being routed through the connected TV over time, that's a lot of money, and that is going to continue to attract new players into the TV OS market. So I thought that was pretty interesting, and I guess I'll just pause for breath here and let you jump in.
Well, the number that you threw out earlier that you mentioned, 17 or 18 different OSs, seems hard to imagine that there's enough market share for each one of those to be sustainable. What do you think?
I agree. But here's the way it seems to be working out, Will, that there is some global ones, of course, like Android TV, Google TV, Samsung Tizen, an LG WebOS. These are available sort of broadly on a variety or in many regions in quantity. But there are also smaller ones that are available in specific geographies. So like Titan OS has just launched here in Europe and is really focused on that market. And there's a few in Asia and in China that have launched. And, you know, Vizio Smartcast, for example, is very specific to the US market. That's really not available anywhere else. And so you have global plays, and then you have local plays. And another thing that's really, I think, causing there to be more fragmentation in the TV OS market is the fact that many of the TV manufacturers now, like Samsung and Vizio and LG, are trying to license out their own TV OSs to other TV manufacturers. And I gotta tell you, if I'm a TV manufacturer, I'm kind of reluctant to go with an OS that is built by a competitor, right? Because you're sort of at their mercy for them to add features, and you can bet they're going to add the features that they want for their TVs first and not yours. So that in itself, I think, will keep the market even more fragmented than it would ordinarily. But I tell you, there is something very much to what you say, Will, and it's very, very hard to understand how all of these operating systems can build sustainable businesses in this market, because as we all know, it's basically an ads-based play. And if you can't aggregate enough eyeballs, then you're just not going to sell enough ads to make any money at it.
Yeah, and you, excuse me, you also need to have a certain amount of scale to even build out an ad sales organization and do all the ad ops and everything else. So there's a little bit of a chicken and the egg phenomenon there, I think, for the players that are just coming into the market now. And I think also speaks to what you're saying about the incumbents that are in there already and have these capabilities are in a, I think, in a very advantaged situation. And that's kind of, I think, how, you know, what's behind the Walmart acquisition of Vizio is it was a strong player, one of the few independents, and very additive to, you know, what Walmart is doing already.
Exactly, and that deal certainly came up in the discussions of the TVOS, and you know, generally that's, you know, people seem to think that that was a good move by Walmart, and as I've said in a couple of pieces, I agree. I think it is a very good move for Walmart. I just hope that they're able to do with it what they need and they can help it grow, because I think it could be extremely helpful to Walmart going forward.
Don't mess it up, in other words. Is that what you're trying to say?
Exactly, exactly. Don't mess it up. And I guess the last big point I wanted to mention here, and this is really a more specifically a European thing, and that is the continued strength of the broadcasters, and particularly the public service broadcasters. One of the presentations given by a guy called Tom Morad, who's an analyst here, he labeled a new trend, which he's calling the super app. And the super app is basically where the public service broadcasters get together in a particular region and launch an app together on a smart TV. And they are doing this because one of the problems that you have when a potential viewer of yours goes and buys a new TV is inevitably it's smart. And the first thing it does is it leads you through connecting to your Wi-Fi. And once you connect to your Wi-Fi, these TVs now all have fast services built in. And so you can begin watching TV without connecting an antenna or a cable TV box to watch your local channels. So this is a big problem, and they estimated, I heard one analyst say that as many as 15% of TVs in the UK now were completely disconnected from traditional broadcast mechanisms. And so as a defense for this, what we're seeing here in Europe, and particularly in the UK, is these super apps where the broadcasters work together. And I was lucky enough to interview Jonathan Thompson. He is CEO of Everyone TV, and actually I will be releasing my interview with him at the show in a couple of weeks. So check out my podcast, End Screen Noise, and I'll be actually releasing a couple of my interviews there through that. But that interview in particular was very interesting, because today Everyone TV runs two other services, Freeview and Freesat. And these are basically the broadcasters working together to be delivered over broadcast on a service called Freeview, over the air. And believe it or not, you can actually receive all of the broadcasters over satellite in a free satellite service called Freesat. And they're launching a third now called Freely. And this is going to be built directly into the smart TVs. They're just about to launch on Hisense TVs in the UK and on Vestel, which actually comes out under a number of different brands. That's just the manufacturing brand. And what this does really is it provides you direct access, streamed access, to all of your local broadcasters, just as if you had connected an antenna. So on the Hisense TV in particular, for example, you can press the guide button on that and it automatically launches Freely, and you can start watching TV over your broadband, you know, and you're just watching BBC, ITV, Channel 4 and several other of the public service broadcasting systems here in the UK. It also does clever things like include broadband assets, so you've got on demand, you can pause, you can replay if you joined a broadcast and the show's already started, you can replay, you can start from the beginning. And it will also link directly via HBB TV, which is built into most TVs here as well. It will link directly to an app from the public broadcaster. So, for example, if you're watching an ITV show and you want to watch other episodes of a show that's currently on broadcast, it will link directly to ITV's smart TV app, ITVX, and you can find the asset in there and start watching. So this is actually, I think, a really smart play by the public broadcasters, and I think this will also continue to retard the adoption of FASTs, because this is one thing that is so different in the UK, Germany, France, is that most people are still watching their free-to-air channels. And if you can continue making it easily available in the smart TV interface as people switch to streaming, then they're going to continue to use it rather than kicking into a FAST service and watching a FAST linear channel. Of course, there'll be some unique assets in those FAST linears that you may want to use. And in fact, some of the public broadcasters are creating their own to pair with their broadcast channels. But it really does keep these public broadcasters front and center. And I think that's a very smart move on their part.
Yeah, kind of. It seems like it's kind of like a preemptive move on their part before FAST really start coming into the market to defend their position in the living room.
It is. And I sort of asked Jonathan about that, and I actually suggested that this would actually decelerate fasts. And I tried to ask about if they felt that fasts and their broadcasts were friends or foes, or how they were thinking about them, and they wouldn't be drawn. But I tell you, well, this approach, because the public broadcast systems are so rich here and local content remains remarkably resilient in the markets, I think it can only retard the growth in fasts even more. So, I think it's a good move.
Well, something to keep an eye on, Colin, and thank you for this dispatch from the UK. I feel like I'm more up to speed than I was before. I'm glad you're covering things over there for all of us, and I think we're going to call it a podcast at this point.
I think so.
So, safe travels over there, and safe travels getting back to the US.
Thank you very much.
And great chatting, and thanks everybody for listening. We will see you all again next week.
Inside the Stream is a production of InScreen Media and Video News, all rights reserved.